So it, lobby has something to do, as we saw yesterday, has something to do with dying. And yet, an initiation, in their terms, is called a dance. And what's dance about? What do we think dance is about?
Joyous affair.
Celebration of life, maybe we could say.
Thanksgiving.
And yet we have this ambiguity. On the one hand, they can speak of this time in the bush, this 3 years in the bush, as a big dance, and yet they say, in terms of participating in it, that you bet it, you kill it. Some anthropologists, or one in particular I'm thinking of, when he is investigating African symbols, he speaks about edification by puzzlement. And that term really sticks with me, because many of the Baya terms for way of expressing themselves are ambiguous. You have two different things going on. The Lapi ritual is really a drama. And let's just think again, as we begin today, about this, the actors in this drama. Hildegard asked one question already about one of those actors. First of all, we have the adolescent boys, who may be from one village or from several villages. There may be a couple of dozen, there may be as many as 50 to 100 in a single initiation. A camp. You have a teacher for these boys whose name in the Lapi language is called Ngandimba. In fact, in order to study this whole ritual of initiation, you have to get into yet another language, one learned during the initiation, the Lapi language. The Gandimba, whose name means the one of blood, because he is involved in the establishment of a covenant where he puts an incision in the abdomen of the boys, and they must then dip a piece of manioc tuber into their own blood and eat that blood, as they make promises never to reveal all the secrets of Lapi. The one who officiates and presides over that is called the one of blood. There is also Naringa, the one who holds the spear. His name literally means that, the one who holds the spear. And much of the symbolizing going on in the rite is centered in this one. He is really the important presider over the whole thing. You also have the woman peace thrower. I spent one day last week describing rites. It was a ladies' day where we described rites presided over by the woman peace thrower, who keeps sori leaves in a peace pot, a water pot, the water of which must never evaporate, and in which must always be kept sori leaves for blessing and peace and well-being in local village. Another person, you asked about this person, is a young virgin, a girl, the name for which means little mother. The Lapi name that they give to this person is Little Mother, and she is invited into the camp at a certain point in the ritual process, where she actually lives in the initiation house, as I explained yesterday, the house of blood where they receive this incision. Also, the initiation house are houses of grass and poles, in the shape of a womb, in the shape of a horseshoe, or as they might describe it, in the shape of a womb. And that opening faces away from the village. And she actually lives in that house with the boys, and she prepares food for them.
In other words, she has been ordained to do this.
Yes.
And every year there is another virgin for the new
to her. For, she remains with a particular group during the entire period of.
And then next year there will be another.
If they stay there for 3 years.
Oh, I see.
You see, then she'll be there. That one person would be there during the entire period.
I see.
And when that initiation is over, usually it's some years. Some say 7 years before another initiation camp starts again. So not all the boys are exactly the same age, but they are within the adolescent range.
Mm-hmm. I came a little late yesterday. Mm-hmm. As I understand, it was Cameroon, wasn't it?
That's right. Cameroon and the Central African Republic. Both
that
of those.
That was a colony of Germany in 14, and they lost it.
They lost it to the French. That's right.
And who has it now?
That was a French, not colony, but mandated to them so that it was within their economic community until 1960, when it became independent, and it's been independent for, it's an independent nation since 1960. Let's just review again, just briefly, the steps of this drama, since several of you were not here yesterday. Just name the actors in the drama. As we look at a rite of passage, this is a rite of passage. Passage from being a child in order to be transformed into an adult. And in a rite of passage, there are, within the ritual process, three kinds of rites going on. First of all, rites of separation. Then rites of the threshold, we might say, during a betwixt and between time on the threshold. They're kind of living between two times. And then rites of reintegration into normal flow of society again. In the rites of separation here, first of all, the adolescents, the young boys, heads must be shaved, their nails clipped, and they go into the initiation period entirely naked. They are taken to a pool. A stream will be dammed up, and the pool is provided where they will be taken by their sponsors. Each boy has a sponsor, not their own natural father, but a godfather, we could say, who looks after, protects the interests of his boy during the entire period, because beatings, whippings, certain kinds of physical sufferings go on during the period. And so the godfather kind of looks after his own kid during this time. They take the boys down to the pool, submerge them in that water, where the Narninga comes with a spear and ritually kills them underwater. Again, this is symbolic. He thrusts a spear at each boy is held by his godfather, held underwater with only the nose above, but pretending to be completely submerged. Again, at the end yesterday, we started reflecting a little bit about some of the symbolism here as a foreshadowing of the gospel, as this series is called. Some of the language we have about baptism, about a dying and a rising, as expressed by the Apostle Paul in Romans 6, there are analogous kinds of symbols here, that dying and rising, going under the water and rising to a new life.
So who selects the godfather?
There are evidently natural relationships within the village, friendships between families, so that these are not unknown, but these are natural friends of families. Maybe an uncle, but not the natural father.
Does every boy that is an adolescent forced? Is that his? Do the parents see that he goes through this ritual? Every boy.
There would be considerable shame attached to any boy who would not have participated in it. And tendency to ostracize anyone who would not have... Now, this is... I'm speaking ideally while, you know, this is some over 20 years ago, since this was, you know, everyone was participating in it. That changed in the early 60s. But when this was being performed on a regular basis, it was expected that everyone would participate. As same for the girls. There are corresponding ritual processes for girls as well. After they have been ritually killed in a pool of water, they're taken up, laid out on the ground next to the pool, face down. Straw is put over them, straw symbolizing that they're getting prepared for their burial, because they by a barrier, they're dead in straw mats. Those boys who are particularly rebellious may even be wrapped up in that straw so that they might think really they're going to get buried now. Or they may be beaten at that time. The,
I have a question.
Yes.
Do those young boys know what's going to happen, or is it all a mystery to them when they get in there?
Presumably this is all a mystery.
In
this
other
is
words,
all
the ones
a mystery.
That went through
and they're instructed. They're instructed beforehand some of the things that are going to happen. But for them to, you know, this is for them to act inappropriately during this time. That is, as if it's a big joke, for example, would entail severe beatings. So it is a very serious matter. They know that their elders who have gone through this take it very, very seriously, and for them to fool around, it's a symbol thing, as I said.
Yeah.
What is in process is a process celebrating what is most meaningful, life itself. And part of that is to go through this period of suffering, where death is, in a sense, simulated. But now the Narninga sends, the one with the spear who killed him underwater, sends a cone, a leaf wrapped up like a cone, in which there is medicine, and this medicine is put into the nostril of each boy, and the boy sneezes and comes to life. And all the initiates wish the boy's health as they come to life again. You have been saved. You have been resurrected from the dead. After which they are taken to the house of blood. And there, as I already described, the incision is made. And while that incision and that covenant is part of that incision, and it's not just an incision made, but they make a promise that they will not reveal any of those things that they are going to learn in the process of initiation now, upon the pains of death. It's a very solemn covenant, and they receive many exhortations during this time about how to live together in community. The training, the schooling that goes on is especially about how to live in harmony, how to live in community together. So there's to be no lying or no stealing. There is to be no bad medicine, in other words, sorcery. That's absolutely verboten.
Taboo.
Yeah, taboo. And one is expelled with brutal beatings if such things would occur. After the time has been spent in the House of Blood, during which they start to learn the Lapi language. It's a language which has some grammatical and idiomatic relationship to their own language, the Gbaya language, but there's a new vocabulary to learn. But it's enough related so that they can pick it up. And there's been enough Lapi language spoken by the initiates also in the village while they've been growing up, so that they learn it fairly quickly. They're tuned into it already, in a sense. They move then to the house of initiation. And during this is where they will spend the most of the time. These earlier rites are the rites of separation from the normal flow of society, and now especially from the house of blood and on to what they call the house of initiation. They are in this liminal period or threshold period where they are learning to live in community.
Those rituals now, are all done in one day?
In the rites of separation under the water and into the house of blood, one day. But in the house of blood, 2 or 3 weeks. They stay there while the wound is being healed.
And learn the language.
And start to learn some of those things which are being taught to them. What are some of those things? Well, names, for example, learning the language, then they'll learn the names of bushes, animals, birds, fish in the bush. Bush lore. I suppose you could compare some of this to some of our Boy Scout teaching, which is a kind of
survival training.
Survival training. How to set traps, how to hunt. Particular animals are hunted particular ways. All that lore of the bush.
Well, it's survival.
Exactly. There are many. Now, what I'm telling you about the Gbaya, Mrs. Oinas was talking about the Eskimo. There are analogous things going on in religions around the globe.
I was in a fraternity, and there was a lot of what you talked about reminds me of the Hell Week and the initiation ceremonies that we had to go
right.
through. An awful lot of
right. I was in a fraternity too, and some of these things, you know, they're like survivals of some of these primal or primordial ritual phenomena in societies around the globe. So again, what I'm describing in a particular instance here, analogies can be located as we study comparative religions around the globe. And let me just put in this parenthesis too, there were rites of initiation at the time when the church was born. And there have been various ways of interpreting the influence of those rites of initiation among Greek-speaking peoples, especially the Hellenistic cults of those early centuries, pre-Christian and in the early Christian years. There's been a lot of debate in comparative religions among historians of religion. Some say, in a very liberal view, for example, that Christians just picked up on that stuff and gave it, you know, some other content. There's much debate. Maybe we could come back to that. I would like to suggest a thing or two about that if there's time toward the end. Again, we talked a little bit about the importance of dance yesterday as a sign of well-being, of health. Any village, you know, this is again one of those principal matters to learn during the initiation. Hunting is secondary, really, to learning dance and imitating all the birds and the animals. Each dance is a little pantomime or a little drama in itself as they imitate all the beasts and the birds of that space where they live.
Do there were certain customs then?
During most of this time, they are smeared with white ashes. Smeared with white ashes, they're naked yet, a sign that they are in a betwixt and between time. They're not in a normal time. They're in a learning time, a set apart time. Well, I'm getting close there to some ways of thinking about the holy. And it is a sacred time. And they are in a sacred space. As they learn about what is sacred for them, how to live in harmony with one another. So their costumes are pretty simple so far. But then they also, as that moves on, there is a point at which, after the examination, remember we ended yesterday with this examination business. And that, after they pass this examination, then they start wearing clothes, and not only white, but also red is smeared on their bodies. Red symbolizing that they have passed through a veil of blood. It may symbolize also life, new life, and the celebration of life. This will come to culmination at the very end of the rite, however. During the examination, just again for some of you who were not in on that yesterday, what's this examination about? This is at the house of initiation, and when they have learned the Lapi language sufficiently well, and much of the lore that they have been taught, and many of the dances which they must learn, then they'll have to undergo an examination. Examination is to interpret notches on a stick, not just any stick, but again this sori stick, a stick from their tree of life, their peace-bringing tree, the cool sori. Here there are meanings of wisdom now attached to the same tree of life. There are 11 notches in this stick, and they must read what each notch means. When they explain it to me, they will use a term which we can also translate, read. But each notch then symbolizes something, signifies something. And it's expressed in terms of a little parable or proverb. There are 11 of them. The first of them is, one cannot know Lapi from outside. One only knows Lapi under the water. One only knows Lapi under the water. Any clue what some of the meanings there might be?
Here we've got talking about the notches now.
Yes.
No.
Yeah. Here's the very first one on the sori stick is, you can't know anything about what's going on here from outside, you know, by somebody telling you on it. You have to go through the thing yourself. You might, you know, compare with some things that Carlisle Holtby is talking about in the whole subject matter of suffering here, because suffering is very much involved here too. There's a dying and there's a rising. He pointed to a passage in Romans 5, about what leads to hope, that endurance. Suffering gives us endurance, and endurance gives us patience. And in all that process, in the Christian sense, that leads to hope. And
is it comparable to our commandments?
That would be an interesting comparison. It is, I would think that'd be a good comparison. There's an analogy here to those commandments, you know. Here are the laws of Lapi that they read off. And again, that first one, you know, you have to have been there in order to know what it's all about. The second one is, the insects join their hands to cross the river together. Any clue what some of the meanings there might be?
The communion of the saints.
Okay. You're really making that, picking up on that analogy in Christian terms here, but in their original context here, they are doing this together. You don't initiate one kid at a time. I mean, this is in community. And they join their hands in order to cross this river here, presumably, an allusion again to that going under the water, dying and rising again, but that's something done in community. And they help one another while they're at it. Again, those values of community are being underlined.
Brotherhood.
On brotherhood. Then there's another very important one here. What happens when you show off your strength? You'll find a battle. There's another basic value here being taught to, you flex your muscles and you'll suffer the consequences. Kind of value here. Again, it's not at all unrelated to this sori stick. the meanings that are in this symbol, this avsori, their tree of life, go back to its own physical properties, the physical properties of this tree, which have to do with it's a soft wood, it's an ordinary bush, but it's very resilient. It might get burned down or cut down, it'll spring right back up again. It's a soft wood, but it's resilient. There is strength. There's also a slippery substance between the bark and the wood itself. Bad things slip right off that tree. The slipperiness there is an interesting... we think in terms of someone who is slippery, for example, and we usually have a negative connotation to that. We might think, however, of some stories in the Bible and the New Testament where people wanted to stone Jesus and he seemed to slip right on through them. There may be another way of extending some imagery there, analogous to some things we have here where the Baya say that bad things slip right off, dangerous things slip right off this sori. You flex your muscles in this case, and you'll know the consequences. You'll meet death. Several of the other proverbs here are related to putting down the whole matter of witchcraft and sorcery. Tomorrow I'm going to spend some time on witchcraft and sorcery, some rituals again where sori is right at the middle. Now, after this examination, just want to mention a few other of the culminating rites in the whole process before we come to some of the final, efforts to reinterpret some things here in Christian terms. There is a very central rite they call climbing the Lingi tree. This also exists in the girls' initiation. The boys will go with the woman peace thrower into the gallery forest, where they will choose a very straight, tall tree, a kutu tree, and they'll peel off all the bark, just like these poles here, and that'll still be somewhat slippery when they, you know, a fresh tree and they peel off that bark, it'll still be somewhat slippery. While they do that, that peace pot of the woman peace thrower will be at the foot of the tree while they're cutting it down. And then they will be careful as it falls that it will not touch the ground, and they will carry it together back to the womb, the initiation house, where the slippery pole will be planted at the mouth of the womb. And the peace pot at the foot with sori leaves in that peace pot always. Then one of the boys designated for this purpose will climb that pole. Before that pole is planted, a little bag of medicine will be tied to the very top of it. That's done before it's put up, see. But he climbs up the pole then to peek into that bag of medicine. He does not untie it, he does not take it down. But he does that on behalf of all his brothers. He peeks into into that little bag of medicine. Then he turns so that he descends halfway down the pole. And when he's halfway down the pole, let me just tell you now what he says. He kind of chants or sings a song at this point. And it's the song of what the Baya call a voyo, bird called a voyo, a robin chat. It's among all the songbirds of West Africa, this songbird has the most spectacular capacities for singing. I can verify that. Sharon and I have heard a voyo sing in our garden day after day, especially in April or May of the year. And that bird imitates just virtually any other bird around, but has a spectacular song. And the myth of this whole thing for the Lapi initiates is that anyone, any initiate who hears the this bird sing can tell you what he is singing. But this is what the boy sings while he's head down, halfway down the pole. I climbed up the tree in order to reach heaven, but I found death in the basket. I went up and found death, and now I'm coming back to tell you. You must be careful lest we die from telling the secrets of Lapi, because what I found in that basket was death, and what I learned was that death is a dangerous thing and that heaven is far away. Only through dying can a person go to heaven. As initiates into Lapi, we must be obedient to what we've seen in the basket. I went and saw it on your behalf, because it was not possible for all of us to go. Now we must all be obedient. I did not go without a reason. I went because you sent me to look at it in your place. Now let us be careful because of death. Death is not something to play with. Death is something dangerous. That's what he sings. Then he comes down, all the way down, and is caught by the other boys. Now that he has succeeded in climbing up and looking into those secrets and coming down again, the fact that he has succeeded is symbolizes well-being already. He has succeeded in looking into some of those secrets, which signifies that there is harmony reigning among the boys already. And so now, as the boy comes down again, they break into singing and dancing, and it's a big festival time, as they also have a big feast at this point, at which the Naraninga is present, at which the woman peace thrower is present.
Are those boys dressed by now? Are they still naked?
Now they will be able to wear some clothes, and when they dance, they wear they have on their skin pods from the mbuki vines. They break big pods in a dried seed, which make noises as they dance. And then they are dressed in very simple dress. We can just mention a couple of things about the rites of re-entry now. The rites of re-entry after several years, usually 3 years, in the house of initiation. When the time comes, they will be told to disassemble that house of initiation, and they'll burn it. Burn it to the ground. Then they'll be led into the stream again, and they'll be washed by the Ndambima, the one of blood. They'll be washed in the stream by the Naraninga, the one who holds the spear, and then they wash themselves. When they climb up out of the water, a little grass fire will be lit, and they must jump over that fire, symbolizing the suffering that they've gone through. And the last one to jump over it must put it out, symbolizing that the sufferings of Lapi are behind them. Then they will also jump over a sori branch. A sori branch, and each of them in turn must jump over that sori branch, symbolizing now this re-entry. Not jumping over it in a sense in some rites that you jump over, for example, the stone between two people who are fighting, and one of them jumps over it, that is to say they're ignoring the peace which Sori puts between them. In this case, it's a threshold, meaning of it is a threshold symbolizing their re-entry into a normal flow of society again. Then an interesting graduation ceremony. This little mother we have mentioned, and the presence again of these two women, the woman peace thrower and the little mother, says something about their understanding of wholeness here, the complementarity of male and female, even at the heart of the initiation rite. These two, but two of the very important actors in the drama are female. Now she takes two white stones. The boys lie down in a row, and the Ndambima and the Naraninga at either side of the little mother, this young virgin, who has two white stones, and she clicks. She dips the stone, first of all, in oil, sesame oil, peanut oil,
in oil and then flicks the stone over each of the boys in turn as he goes down the line. And so that oil from the stone flows over those boys. And oil over their head. Again, a kind of anointing, reminding me of one of the Psalms here, Psalm 133. Behold how good and pleasant it is when brothers dwell in unity. It's like the precious oil upon the head, running down upon the beard of Aaron, running down on the collar of his robes and so on. We have some of the same kind of imagery among the people of analogous kind of imagery, with anointing with oil among the people of Israel, and how good it is to our unity. Well, again, there's a theme that's been right at the heart of this whole initiation business. Then, when that, some of the by our friends have said that's kind of getting their diploma at this point from initiation. After which, but not enough, the one who holds the spear washes his hands in front of the initiates and their fathers and godfathers to symbolize that the heat of symbol, that danger of death, that danger of violating life, is over. And that he is washing his hands in front of the boys to symbolize that these dangers have now passed. Then comes the final celebration, what they call Dangalapi or Dakalapi. Dangalapi, the climbing up of Lapi out of their bush camp, or Dakalapi would mean pulling them up out of that bush camp. They all line up. They, first of all, are all well attired now. Now comes they're smeared with a camoid, a red camoid, and oil, so that their bodies glisten red, a celebration of life and new birth. And then they will all hide, each of them, under a mat. Remember I said that mat symbolized burial, for the Baya bury their dead in a new white mat. Now they'll have each of them a mat over them to hide their identity as they go back into the village. They'll go back into the village for the first time in several years, openly. And the Narminga comes and puts on the same kind of show he put on when they were all killed under the water at the very beginning. One time, twice he comes, and three times, I talked about the importance of three as a male number, four as a female number. I'm going to add them up. The third time, as he comes with a spear, they throw off their mat, and for the first time then their identity, their mothers and the uninitiated and the children can look on their faces again after all these years in the bush. Not far away in the bush, but hidden from the normal flow of society. And so it's just they're really, as Baya Idiom has, they burst forth in dancing, and they use the term goma. Yoya here, and the goma is what a flower does in the morning when it breaks open. And that joyous celebration and feasting goes on now with their family as they perform the dances.
But how many years did it depend on this?
3 years was the general time.
So then there, as always, a village community always has people out in the bush.
As I said, there could be a period of 7 years between those initiation camps. But for the girls, evidently they're a smaller group and every year. Because part of that they were simply in the village. And they were not in the bush for that long a period. But for the boys,
so they're in at the wide range of age.
There could be a wide range of age, from 12, up to
10.
Yeah, they could be that long. That's it. There are ways. For one thing, during the dry season, they are hunting and fishing, and they've learned all that, and so there's a lot of self support that's being learned there, self sufficiency, survival, as you mentioned. But also, when they get hungry and they feel like people in the village have forgotten about them, each of them carries a big shield. Each of them has a big shield, three colors on the shield. White symbolizing death, black symbolizing suffering that they're going through, red symbolizing new life.
Mm-hmm.
They hide behind these shields, back of the village, and they may whistle. They may not speak, but they may whistle. Back of where their own families are. And then someone from the family is to come out and leave food for them, while the boy remains hidden behind the shield. And then they take their food and go on back. If they feel they're being maltreated, they may also, they have what we call a lot of stick, and they blacken their body so that they're not recognizable. And then they may go in group and raid the village. Raid the kitchens, their mother's kitchens, to carry out some food because they're not getting enough. There's an interesting mixture here, again, of the seriousness and the play that goes on. The seriousness of play. Well, after this final ceremony, then you have really the transformation has happened. Transformation from children into adults. The very final rite, then they will once again be washed in a stream in a purification rite corresponding to the same kind of ritual procedure performed when someone has killed a person or one of the taboo animals. That must also happen at the very end, and when that's done, and all the dangers are passed, that culminates again in anointing and a ritual meal together, after which they're free to go look for a wife. Now that doesn't mean just grab a girl and go get married after all this, because that gets into a whole other process, that of the fiancé, you might say, that courtship period, and that will be a period when the boy will be working for the girl's parents over a period of time. So it's not just an automatic get hit time after the rituals are over. Just mention too that during life, if a boy dies, the mother is not told about that death until the thing is all over. And at that time, if she finds over the threshold of her house a toilet, then she knows that her boy died during the initiation out in the bush and was buried out in the bush. And the story is there to cool her grief. Once again, the tree of life, in the midst of coping with death and the threat of death. Time is again running out. Let me just, in a couple of words.
I have a question.
Sure, go ahead.
Are those types plagued by venereal diseases?
Venereal disease. That's an interesting question in this context here. I'm not sure what all the concerns are which relate to this. But I would say in recent years, shitty ways of life are also extending into the bush in many ways. And that includes venereal diseases. But I would say in traditional society, that was much less of a problem than it is today. As I've done in a number of other sessions, the kind of last word, and as a way of reflecting in the light of the gospel on these ritual phenomena, where story is at the center, I have reflected my ways as I might with a colleague in Bioland. Thinking about the gospel stories of Jesus on the one hand, and these stories, ritual stories from their own tradition on the other hand, and letting one inform the other, and letting the gospel story of Jesus fulfill that other story, and really break it open, and really give it a brand new meaning. In my way of looking at this, that gospel fulfills in the sense of giving it the jolt of a new center. It brings a critique to these former or old meanings. It is not a simple continuity between old and new. There is something broken open to get a brand new meaning. Sorias for undergoing an initiation, as we said. Jesus, our sort of cool thing in the idiom used by a Christian, came into our village in order to be the way, the truth, and the life for us here in this village. Yet ultimately to bring us in his unique way to the Father. He makes our lives a passage, an initiation with him. Jesus, our sorry cool thing, is in the world but not of it. For he is the Word who was in the beginning and was with the Father before the world was created. He is the wisdom who reveals God's glory to us, lighting up our paths as the true light, kind of picking up on some symbolism here from the initiation rite in terms of our life in the kingdom which is an already not yet kingdom of the twixt and between time in which we live as Christian people. As wisdom, Jesus, our sort of cool thing, teaches us those things that are above, instructing us in telling the truth and doing what pleases God, thus leading us to life eternal. He invites us to eat and to drink of his life and his wisdom in order that we might live as he lives. Jesus, our sorry cool thing, does not simply wait for us to come to him, for he comes to seek us. In his wisdom, he calls us together as sisters and brothers in discipleship, to learn together his sorry way, to test us and to lead us through the testing, as we learn there in the testing to love one another. And so he purifies us and he sanctifies us in his word and in his truth, calling us friends. He issues constant warning to those who jump over him, lest they die. He did not come to condemn them, but to save them. Yet death comes to those who reject his way, his truth, his life. Jesus, our sorry cool thing, brings a wisdom that provokes division. Some seek and find, and others go their way to death. Jesus, sorry cool thing, incarnate wisdom, reveals his strength in his meekness. He teaches us wisdom from above, which is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, open to reason, full of mercy and good fruit, without uncertainty or insincerity. Jesus, our sorry cool thing, leads us through mystery and through hardship. Yet his aim is to join in celebration with us, his friends, at the end of our passage. Jesus is the way who leads from death to new life. That way takes us under the water where we die. But his blood is in the water, and his life for us is in the blood, given for us to rise with him. Reflecting our way out of some images from by initiation. Maybe they are images to deepen and broaden some longings we have in our own society for community, longing for true names, longing for mysteries unfolded, longing for death integrated, longing for waters of blessing in our midst. Images which may help us to imagine what is even really beyond our imagining, God's love for us. And I think it makes sense to them, especially as it gets expressed in or by means of a symbolic vocabulary with which they are at home. That may be that that may mean reinterpreting what we read about sin in the New Testament, for example, and grace in the New Testament, to give it a language coming out of some of these rituals. For example, the whole matter of symbols that I've referred to, relating the violation of life to the whole matter of sin against the Holy One. You know, the relation here of holiness and life as holy, relating some of those ideas, I think, for one way of responding to, but lying and stealing and adultery and all of those things are related to the violation of life itself, because they're ways that lead to death. And that, in those terms we're using as sinful, is what Simbo is about. So, I have found that making use of this Simbo and Sore way of presenting law and gospel makes a lot of sense in that place. Okay, thanks very much.